Wow.
I call this House Finance Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is February 13th at 1:38 p.m. Today we have with us Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Cologne, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Foster will be joining us later, and we also have with us Representative Edgman and myself, Representative Johnson. Today we have a presentation on the proposed FY 2025 operating budget from the Department of Public Safety. Here today in the room to present, we have James Cockle, Commissioner, Pam Halloran, Administrative Services Director, Lisa Purinton, Division of Statewide Services Director, Mary Beth Gagnon, Executive Director, Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We also have representatives from the department available for questions telephonically. And we will proceed through our presentation. Commissioner Cockle, if you would like to come forward, introduce yourself and your team, state your affiliation for the record, and proceed with your presentation.
Through the chair, James Cockrell, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Public Safety. To my left is Pam Halloran, our Administrative Director, and Lisa Purinton, our Statewide Services Director. And as you pointed out, we may have some lifelines online just in case you stump us on a question. I do want to start out saying how, first of all, I'm really nervous to say, I don't know why. There's a lot going on this, but I do want to thank you all for allowing us to have this opportunity to talk about our department and our FY25 budget asks. Most of our slides are budget related, and hopefully we'll have some narrative. I want to start out saying the department is going in the right direction. With the support of the administration, specifically the governor and the legislature, we have made huge gains in the last 2 to 3 years. And if you look at the cuts that we took in from 14 to FY18, they were substantial and they were disastrous to our department. It put us way in a hole that we're continuing to dig out of. I figured when I took this job, it was going to take us 3 to 4 years to get to the place where I thought this department should be going. We're at year three, and we're getting close. If you look at our budget asks this year compared to the last 2 years, they're substantially less because we are making gains. We're progressing in a direction that I think this department needs to go, and we're providing services around the state at a level that I don't think we have for a long time. Certainly not anything that I've done, but the staff I have with me here in Anchorage and the troopers that we have around the state are working their butts off to provide the professional law enforcement in all regions of the state. There's not one area that we really don't touch as an agency, whether it's our court services officers, our Alaska State Troopers are our VPSOs. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to talk today, and I'm hoping, like always, that we have a productive dialogue, because I think that's the best way to learn. I think it's important that lawmakers know what this department's doing, because we are a law enforcement agency, and we are about everywhere in the state. Certainly, we have some successes. We graduated 20 troopers in 2023. We've got approximately We think we're going to graduate in the current class, which is going on right now. We think that we're going to graduate another 20. We deploy body-worn cameras, which I'm wearing, and it's not on, so you don't have to worry about it. So I'll put it on the table. But I think it's important that I wear it because it sets the examples for our troopers, even at the levels that we're at, that we are wearing body-worn cameras. And it's been, a huge step forward in transparency and also just for gathering evidence. It's done what we wanted to do, so we're really pleased there. The wildlife troopers participated in a special enforcement in Area M. As you know, there's a lot of angst about the YK Delta salmon runs that are going, and those fish have to run through Area M, which is over by the Alaska Peninsula outside of Sandpoint, King Cove. And based on their enforcement efforts, they boarded about 400 commercial vessels. We took our A-Star helicopter out there with our super zoom camera, and we were able to actually see fishermen dumping salmon overboard in violation of the law, and we made several cases, and we're adjudicating those cases now. I applaud the efforts of the wildlife troopers to deploy our helicopter. We've never done that in the history that I've been around, and the helicopter was able at 5 miles to videotape them, the fishermen actually dumping salmon overboard, which is illegal because we want to ensure that all salmon are caught or taken to the processors for fish and game can determine what the interception rate is, and we're talking mostly chum salmon in the Yukon River. And the department also through the crime lab has deployed the sexual assault examination kit tracking system, so a victim or survivor of sexual assault can track their kit all the way through the process. And I think that's a huge step forward. And with that, again, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk.
So we have your presentation, your budget presentation. I'm not sure who's going to lead us through. I don't know if is that slide one? Yes. Or I think we also have some questions, looks like. And so if we want to start with questions or comments, I want to make sure I don't just limit it to questions. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Thank you, Commissioner Staff, for being here today. We have an obligation as legislators in this building to take care of public safety. That's a constitutional obligation. So it's we all take it seriously, and it's congratulations on the successes that you guys have made so far in the last several years, and really appreciate that. Going back to you made an interesting comment in relationship to your wildlife troopers and being able to utilize a helicopter to take some photos of some what you say to be illegal activities out there on the ocean in terms of catching. Was that primarily done by the dragging fleet, or do you know the group that's known as draggers? Can you tell me about that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. Essentially, we're dealing with the gillnet fleet out
gillnet
there.
Fleet.
Yes, sir. Gillnet fleet.
Follow up, Representative Ortiz?
Why would it have been illegal for the gillnetters to catch the fish? I mean, that's their target fish is the chum salmon. Do you know what the situation was there?
Through the chair, if I can correct you, the reason that by regulation they have to keep all salmon on board for the Department of Fish and Game can calculate how many chum salmon are actually being taken versus other salmon, specifically red salmon. There's issues with the amount of chum salmon's going up the Yukon River, and the general thought is that they're being intercepted in Area M. So that's why we want to make sure that all the fish are counted so we don't allow them to.
Okay. Anyway, thank you for the clarification. I appreciate that.
Yeah, just a quick comment, unrelated. I just want to thank the commissioner. I want to thank the commissioner and the department for the great work they're doing, and throughout the presentation, I can look ahead and see there's a slide on the VPSO program. I think there's more we can talk about, some pretty exciting news for those of us that represent smaller communities. And also, just to flag it, at some appropriate time, Madam Co-Chair, I want to ask the commissioner about a trip he took out to Dillingham this past November, and I'm happy to wait for more appropriate time to interject.
All right. Thank you. We'll make sure we try to hit high points. There's so many things that I think we all probably want to talk about, and Representative Galvin, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner and team. I appreciate the work. My question is around something that you mentioned as well, related to the successes, and that is the sexual assault victims kit, the sexual assault kit, and that the victims may follow it all the way through the process. I wondered if you would help us understand what that means. What that I know that for a while there was concerns around the length of time and such, and so if you could help us appreciate that, I'd be grateful.
To the chair, Representative Galvin, pleased to do that. Essentially, if law enforcement, whether it's the Alaska State Troopers or another law enforcement agency, investigates a sexual assault, they normally will have a SART nurse do the sexual assault kit. Once all that's taken care of, they give the victim I'll call it a number to get to the app. That way they can follow their sexual, it's actually a scan that we can scan the sexual assault kit all the way to the crime lab through law enforcement, through this, I'll say the SART nurse or the hospital or clinic to law enforcement. Law enforcement sends crime lab. Crime lab will process and put it in evidence. And then as they process it, the person can follow it all the way to it's completely processed, the sexual assault kit. Hopefully I'll answer your question.
Yeah, I have one question, though. I just want to make sure. Are you going to talk about that at any point in your presentation, or is this?
Through the chair, sexual assault kit.
Well, yeah, just your sexual assault piece. I mean, otherwise, I mean, we can go into it in more detail here, or we can wait until we get to a portion of the presentation. That's all I was wondering. Right.
Through the chair, we do have an ask for crimes against victim or crimes against children slide to follow up on one of our budget asks coming up. Maybe we can address that topic and others related to that at that time.
Representative Galvin, would you like to continue?
I can wait and we can ask the questions then.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll try to let's go through. Let's go ahead and at least we'll go through the first three slides, make it through the funding history, and before we take the next round of questions, if you would.
To the chair, with your permission, I'll have Director Hammond take care of those slides, the budget stuff. She's much better than I am.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. This slide that we're on, the commissioner did a great intro, so we might not necessarily need to stay on it too long, but I wanted to emphasize again the statewide impact of the agency, that the agency has across the state that's over and above law enforcement and investigations. Our crime lab supports law enforcement agencies throughout the state. Our victim services compensation board provides compensation for victims of crime statewide as well. Search and rescue activities, we coordinate those search and rescue activities with volunteer agencies throughout the state. So I won't stay on here too long since the commissioner did such a good job with the intro, and we'll get into the money. Oh, and for the record, my name is Pam Halloran. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Public Safety. It's nice to be here. Slide three represents our budget organization chart. So DPS is comprised of seven divisions, three councils, and a board. Our Fire and Life Safety Division holds the Alaska Fire Standards Council. Our Alaska State Troopers houses the Alaska State Troopers, as well as the Alaska Wildlife Troopers and our aircraft section. Our Village Public Safety Officer is a new division, now under a new division director, so we're very happy about that. The Alaska Police Standards Council, which we can get into a little bit later in the presentation, our new Victim Services Division, which is pulling in different victim services and support-related functions that were throughout the department into a division. So we're happy to share more about that for you as well as our Statewide Support Division, which again comprises two divisions, our Division of Administrative Services, as well as our Statewide Services Division. Our Statewide Services Division holds our Crime Lab, our Criminal Justice Information Systems Program, our Information Systems Team, which would be our IT support, as well as our ALMR, Alaska Land Mobile Radio Shop, we call it. They're called the Alaska Public Safety Communication Services. It also holds our commissioner's office and the training academy. So support functions throughout the agency are held there. And by the way, Lisa is our Statewide Services Division Director, who is acting as our legislative liaison this session. So if we have questions on that, we can put her in the hot spot. Moving on to slide 4 is funding history. So we're providing you a 5-year look back from FY29 management plan all the way through FY25 governor's budget. Against each year, we're showing you our actuals. Our request for FY25 comprises of $260,000 or just over UGF. Overall, that budget is a 3.4% increase over FY24, which is comprised of 5.2% UGF, which is just over $12 million. There's a decrease in designated general fund, which is related to the fact that we have a multi-year program receipt authority for our Criminal Justice Information Systems program that will end this fiscal year. We also have a decrease in our fund source called Other, which is associated with a decrease in the Restorative Justice Fund account funds, which align with statute, which provides for the balance of the fund, which is based off the number of non-eligible inmates within the Department of Corrections and the permanent fund dividend amount. So we're experiencing a small decrease within our Violent Crimes Compensation Board and our Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We have a slight increase in federal, and that's related to a joint enforcement agreement that provides for federal authority within our Alaska Wildlife Troopers Marine Enforcement Unit to perform missions on behalf of the federal government, marine type missions. Moving on to slide 5, this shows our FY25 budget in two ways. On the left, we're showing you the FY25 budget by line item, with personal services by far being our highest expense. And on the right, we're showing our budget by allocation or appropriation, with the Alaska State Troopers comprising of 62% of our overall budget. So personal services represents 53% of our budget, with services falling behind at 21% and grants at 15% of our total FY25 request. Moving on to slide 6. Slide 6 highlights the funding breakdown for the agency. UGF comprises 79% of our FY25 request, with federal falling behind at 13%. The column on the right highlights our federal fund sources, Department of Justice, Homeland Security, and the Department of Transportation, different fund sources that we use to meet our mission. The other funds consist of interagency capital improvement project funds, Mental Health Trust Authority, and the Crime Victim Compensation Fund. And the designated general fund is primarily program receipts, with a small allocation of the recidivism reduction fund within our Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Would you go ahead, Representative Galvin?
Thank you. Through the chair, Chair Johnson, I'm looking at slide 4, and I really appreciate this clear visual for us. It helps me to see where maybe there's an anomaly. Actually, maybe it's with the federal funding that comes in. I'm looking at the budget versus actual, in particular 2023. Looks like maybe about half was used, and I'm wondering if that was because of vacancies or what was it that we couldn't get to.
Representative Galvin, through the chair, I believe, if my memory serves me right, that a fair amount of federal authority was not used within our fire and life safety division that year. So that would have been FEMA awards that went underutilized, primarily because I believe that they were still working their way out of COVID and trying to get back up to speed on their plan reviews and some of that work that involved travel.
Follow up. So could you paint a picture for what that would mean to Alaskans in terms of services? If FEMA wasn't able to travel here or something like that, what would they be doing that would help Alaskans?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I could guess, and that's probably not an appropriate way to answer your question. Mm-hmm. So I might call a lifeline and see if Lloyd Nakano, our state fire marshal, is on the line and can speak to the impact of the lack of utilization of federal funds in FY23.
Mr. Nakano, did you hear the question?
Yeah, for the record, my name is Lloyd Nakano, the director for the Division of Fire and Life Safety. Through the chair, the grant authority for 500K was not used because we were still evaluating our live mobile fire trainer at the time. And it has zero impact at this time for not getting any federal funds. The federal funds that we request is mostly for our equipment, for training equipment in our division.
Did that answer your question?
Okay, I have one follow-up, if I may, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate that. Now we're looking at a supplemental budget that is deeply in asking for fire safety funds from the state, and it may be completely unrelated. And I'm just trying to understand if that is so, or is there some relation to not being able to spend, it sounds like some equipment updating and things like that, as opposed to the need for more emergency equipment. If you could help me to understand those two lines. So remember, our supplemental budget is asking for, I believe, $61 million in emergency fire. And it may be a completely separate line item, but I'm just hoping to understand that.
And that's
with the DNR, yes.
It's in the DNR budget.
Yes.
Through the chair, that $61 million does not affect the Division of Fire and Life Safety. It is with DNR, Department of Forestry.
Okay, so the missions are completely separate and different.
Through the
chair.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Commissioner, and I guess I want to preface my observation or question first with, I've been very supportive of the additions and the things, especially under your leadership, the Department of Public Safety have done, including putting $24 million towards village public safety officers. This chart, though, shows us from 2019 actuals to 2025 governor, a growth of $132 million, a really big increase in percentages in your department. And I'm hoping you can just take the shock and awe factor out of that and speak to why that growth has been there in the department over the last 5 years.
Through the chair, I was not expecting that question. I do know in the last two fiscal years, the department has gained about $81 million. I will say, again, I kind of mentioned it before, that during FY14 through 18, the department took substantial cuts that we're still digging out of. When you have a law enforcement agency such as ours or any law enforcement agency, it takes a long time to build up. Just trying to even fill our trooper positions when we went almost 4 years without really having a meaningful impact on our recruiting efforts because we were told we were going to have to lay troopers off. So it made no sense for us to hire troopers when the administration at the time said, yeah, you're going to have to lay them off. And it makes it really difficult as a department when you don't have sustained funding that you can count on. And certainly, you know, I was the colonel for 4 years during that time, and that was probably the worst part of my career, is because we cut out anything and everything that was proactive this department did. I know it affected citizens' lives, and it certainly affected the lives of our troopers because of those cuts. And again, I've been very happy or satisfied with where the administrations went. I mean, certainly when the governor interviewed me, we had a goal in mind. We had a target, how many troopers that we wanted that we felt was adequate. The governor has supported us 100% in not only trooper positions, but we also lost at least 40 civilian positions during those 4 years. We're getting those back. It makes more sense to use administrative support than a trooper to bag evidence or take their case reports to the DA's office, et cetera. And we were doing that because we didn't have any administrative support. We're fixing that right now over the last couple of years. And we will continue to work. You know, my job as the commissioner is to ensure that our people are safe, not only my troopers, but all my staff. And the citizens that we're serving are safe, and that we're providing a level of service that no other law enforcement agency can do in this state or in this country. That is my mandate. I hope I answered your question.
Through the chair.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I think you're spot on, and I wanted to give you that opportunity because I support that mission, and I want to reinforce that there's two directives in the state constitution for the state to do, and that is public safety and public education. And in one mission, we are saying we cut it too deep, and we need, if we want a safer Alaska, to fund it and build it and make sure that we are working for the betterment of Alaska. And then the other, we're saying, if you're not doing your job, then we're going to shut you down, and we're going to underfund you, and then we're going to continue to demand that you perform better with less money. And we know from law enforcement that direct correlation measured annually. If we don't have troopers, there's less enforcement, and communities are less safe. So I think the growth is dramatic if we look just at charts, but I think it's vital to meeting our constitutional mission of Alaska.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue on.
Chair Johnson, I wanted to circle back to the question that was just asked in regard to federal authority between management plan and actuals in FY23. I kind of put our fire and life safety division on the spotlight there. And as those questions were being answered, and as I was taking notes here with Lisa, there's a couple other areas where we underspent our federal authority. And one of them was within our Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We've spoken the past couple of years about the VOCA, Violent Victim of Office of Violent Crimes Act, federal funds reducing. There was a UGF one-time appropriation in FY23 in the amount of $3.5 million. And so that to replace that loss in federal funding. So that's probably a little bit of what we're seeing there. We have a federal award for the Criminal Justice Information Systems Program. It's a multi-year. That's for the modernization of our Criminal Justice Information Systems Program. And so we're slowly working our way through that appropriation as well. And then through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm curious about the number that you cited to the commissioner. Can you repeat that number to me?
I was using the FY 2019 actuals and the FY 25 governor.
Okay.
And the difference between those being about $132 million.
Okay. All right, we'll have to take a look at that. I'm looking at the Ledge Finance report here that is showing FY15 through 25, and it's showing 82.7 million UGF. So
I'm taking right off that.
Okay, great. Anything else? Moving on to slide 7, our first, we're now going to work our way through the divisions. We are going to highlight a few significant budget changes throughout this, the rest of this presentation, but definitely not all. Within our Fire and Life Safety Division, let me get on the right page, our request is $7.3 million, which is a $200,000 increase over FY24, which is comprised of primarily UGF. There is a $100,000 request, which is general fund for a new lease for the Fire and Life Safety Division to move into a new space adjacent to our headquarters office.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Halloran, on this slide, the Fire and Life Safety Division, a couple times in the last 2 years, once each year, I've met with a fire official who essentially has propped up, I think, the Alaska Fire Standards Council and asked us to fund that with state employees to keep its operation going. And I hardly remember the details of the discussion, but an amendment was offered in this committee, perhaps on the floor. Those amendments failed. Am I right that the Fire Standards Council, which you mentioned on slide 3 as well, is essentially run by professional volunteers at nighttime? Does this ring a bell with any of you?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I can tell you that there is one staff member assigned to the Alaska Fire Standards Council. It's an administrative assistant, too. And I might let the commissioner expand further on that.
Thank you.
To the chair, Representative Josephson. There's not a really easy answer to this. Essentially, the Fire Council is not mandated by state law, and like the Alaska Police Standards Council, I have in the past talked to members of the fire service that if things are to change with the council, then they should statutorily require it, just like the Alaska Police Standards Council. They lost two positions during, I think, FY18. Because of budget cuts, and also they wanted to use that funding to hire a trooper because we were not hiring troopers at that point in time. Since that time, we haven't really, because again, I think it's a policy issue, we really haven't tried to get that position, those two positions filled back, just based on the analogy that they most likely could get cut again. And I think the most recent, there was a veto on one of the positions, as you probably know.
Just
one sure
my distinct memory is that the fire official who I spoke to essentially was doing this because he was a good guy, a good citizen. And without his extraordinary efforts, there just wouldn't be anything. I may redouble my efforts when the time comes on that appropriation. Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else? Let's go ahead and keep moving along. Thanks.
Slide 8 reflects our Alaska State Troopers Division. Within this division, the budget request is just over $197 million, which is a 5% increase over FY24, or $9.4 million. Just over $8 million, it reflects the UGF increase for the Alaska State Troopers Division. We're going to highlight five requests for the Alaska State Troopers Division very quickly. Don't want to spend too much time so that, because we realize this process is happening in the subcommittee. Recruitment and retention is one of our commissioner's key objectives for the agency. and we've requested just under $250,000 to stand up a program manager to figure out new ways, implement new strategies to evaluate policies and procedures around recruitment. This position will free up a commissioned lieutenant to do his primary duties. This request also supports travel for 75 recruits that are near the end of their application process. They must travel to Anchorage for their final screening, polygraph, and things like that. And we have found that travel, putting that cost on the recruit, is a barrier to recruitment. And so we'd like to receive this funding to be able to fly 75 recruits who are well along in the recruitment process to Anchorage for that process. Our next request is move gross up, which aligns nicely with an item in our supplemental request. This allows us to provide or pay the tax for staff who move. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 requires that us as an agency attach all costs related to moving a trooper and or their family to rural Alaska. And since moving to rural Alaska is a condition of employment, we would like to be able to pay that tax. And it's a move up, gross up process that we work with the Department of Administration on that evaluates that tax and adjust that for the employee so they're not on the hook for a $60,000 move cost, which can result in quite a tax bill. Our next request is for equipment and supplies. This is a multi-year request, FY25 through FY27. The request is within our Alaska State Troopers and our Alaska Wildlife Troopers appropriation. It will fund just general equipment and supplies that are needed. We're seeing inflationary cost increases throughout the agency for things like ammunition, uniforms, safety gear, everything a trooper needs to essentially do their job. We also, our CERT team is in need of equipment upgrade desperately, and so this will also provide for an equipment upgrade for our CERT team. We're requesting three vehicles for our judicial services team. They're currently using vehicles that are considered end of life, meaning those vehicles were replaced, but the replacement vehicles went to troopers, not judicial services. They kept these older vehicles online much longer than they should. There's no replacement value, and we're requesting to replace three vehicles. And then our final request on this page is to add three non-permanent investigators in Bethel. The volume of crimes against children in Western Alaska exceeds trooper capacity in that area. We also realize that these types of investigations are very unique and specialized, and that special modernized investigative measures are needed for interviewing victims and witnesses and suspects. So this provides for three long-term non-perm positions to Bethel to address that.
Representative Joseph, sir.
Just real quickly, through the chair, why does the department seek these as non-permanent rather than permanent?
To the chair, I'll try to answer that question. Representative Josephine, first of all, we don't have right now the capacity to put uniform investigators there or trooper investigators there. And I saw this as a pilot program to potentially, if it works out, we could move it into other areas of the state. Having the flexibility, having a long-term, non-perm trooper, law enforcement officer, what it does is, because currently right now, if we have a sexual assault on an adult in the Bethel region, our major crime investigators investigate that. If it's a crime against a child, then our uniform troopers do that. What happens is it when we do, because they're in, as you know, you're a DA for many years, they're very intensive, labor intensive, and time consuming. And that takes the uniform position out of the villages where we actually want them to be policing. So what we wanted to do is again hire three long-term non-perm physicians to investigate just crimes against children, evaluate that program, and if we get our significant increases in our trooper staff, we'll put actual Alaska State Troopers there. So essentially that's where we're at with it. I think it's important. I think based on the information I was provided by the Alaska Bureau of Investigations, in 3 years we had about 500 referrals. So that's about 2.7 a week that we were handling, and we're at essentially capacity there too. So I think this is a good thing. It's a good step forward for the department and for the victims in that region of the state.
Thank you.
Calvin? I'm not sure. Somebody's hand was up over there.
Thank you, through the chair. That was my question, but I did have one more that was related to hiring, and that is, I think you mentioned earlier that you were proud to share you have 20 graduates coming along as state troopers, perhaps. And my question is, 20 of how? What is the vacancy total right now? Where would you like to be in terms of fully staffed?
Through the chair, our target goal is for AST is over 400 troopers, and our wildlife troopers 100. If you look at, I came on the department, and I've said this before, probably in 1983, we have as many troopers in 1983 as we do now, authorized positions, which actually for wildlife they had 121 and they're at 90, so they lost 31 positions. So we haven't really gained whole lot. So we certainly have a goal, and we were working towards that goal, and that's one of the things I failed at. I just haven't been able to fill the trooper positions. And we think we'll graduate about 20 at this next class. We've got BPSOs there, and we've got three court service officers there. So I don't know that I'm answering your question, but the bottom line is we need to where I would say that we could start filling some of our other positions. We're down about 60 positions. And that includes wildlife and AST. Most of them are AST related. I think wildlife has about 10, and it fluctuates. I'm just giving you what I know. Tomorrow it could be 65 or it could be 55, just depending on how things go. This doesn't count the troopers we currently have at the academy, and because we don't count those, so they go off their FTO. I know that we've got some at FTO right now in the Valley, and we've got one, I think, on the Kenai Peninsula.
Thank you.
I think our subcommittee must be doing such a great job. All the questions, they're digging into it there, and I know they're going to have another chance in subcommittee, but feel free if you want to make sure that you want to emphasize anything, make sure that, okay, pretty good.
Moving on to slide 10, FY25 reflects a significant investment in our commitment to resourcing our department's effort to missing and murdered Indigenous persons. There's two budget requests related to this. First is a $250,000 request within our commissioner's office. The commissioner's office houses our public information office. They are running on a recommendation from a missing and murdered persons, missing and murdered Indigenous persons work group to launch an advertising campaign that lets the public know that it's not necessary to wait 24 hours to report a missing person. The second request provides for full funding for four existing missing and murdered Indigenous investigators. They exist. They're currently not funded. We're requesting funding to support those positions.
Through the chair, if I could touch on that just a little bit, I'll be quick. Right now, currently, we have, like we say, four investigators. We're actively investigating six cases in four regions of the state. So they're essentially, we are working cases as we speak.
Are you familiar with the council that we have one bill that's to establish a missing or indigenous persons council? I think it's under the Council on Domestic Violence, I think. Are you familiar with that at all? I think it might be a federal, part of a federal, it might be a requirement to receive some federal funds. I just wondered if you were familiar with that at all. And we have a human trafficking bill too, and so I'm just wondering how those two bills might come together and be valuable for your department.
Chair Johnson, I'm not familiar with the Missing and Murdered Persons Council.
Okay.
Our commission.
It's council.
Commission. To the chair, if I can help you out here a little bit. The Department of Public Safety has a Missing and Murdered Indigenous working group that was originally was in the governor's first initiative. We've taken that on. There, I know that there's, I believe, two bills tracking right now, one in the Senate and one in the House on setting up a council, and there's some requirements for our department too. So essentially, I'm not sure where it's at, but there are two standing bills, to my knowledge, currently right now
to address that. I'm sorry, excuse me. I think one does have a commissioner designee seat on the commission. Just so I get that right. But anyway, I was just wondering because I thought there were some federal funds, but as I've looked into it, it appears that maybe the federal funding is kind of going away. But anyway.
And through the chair, when we first hired our first investigator, which was 2021, I believe, and that position was federally funded. That funding lasted for a year, and then from that time on, certainly one position was not enough. I certainly underestimated the totality of the issues in hand. So we hired a second person, and again, it wasn't enough. So now we're currently up to four investigators, and they're, I'll say, they're very active, very dedicated to solving the cases that we have on hand. If you want to go a little bit further, currently we're working cases that were in trooper jurisdiction. We are currently working one outside of our jurisdiction that came to us. Everybody probably saw that at Kotzebue. But primarily, until we whittle down the cases that are in our jurisdiction, we'll continue to work those. We look at cases where we have either evidence, either DNA evidence, blood evidence, or fingerprints, all are a really good police report. There's no sense taking on a case where there's really nothing and the case is 10 years old. These are cold cases for a reason. But I know our investigators are very dedicated. I met with them all last week. I get briefings on what they're doing because it is a priority of me personally and our department.
Representative Cronk.
Through the co-chair, I just want to say thank you for you taking the initiative on this, because this is a really important topic, and it doesn't matter where in Alaska it's at. This is real. It's happening, and thank you for the people you hired, because I have the utmost confidence in who you have. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Commissioner, I'm just, and it's probably for Ms. Halloran, the $450,000 to fully fund the existing non-perm. And I heard you say that those are four investigators, and I'm concerned this is too low of a ticket when we look at the three child crime investigations is almost $700,000. So are they funding them in some other way? And so this is the only part of it is UGF?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that. The $450,000 will fund two positions and all the equipment that's associated with bringing on the positions. There was an appropriation last year in the amount of $250,000 for this effort that happened on the Senate side. So between that and the $450,000, we'll be able to equip these folks with automobiles and all the necessary things that they need to do their job.
Thank you. And then one follow-up, the box next to that on outreach and education. as a, just help me understand why that's a separate allocation versus funding for these investigators, or is it they're doing two different?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, those are two separate budget divisions within our, so it's just where we're organizationally structured. Our public information office just happens to be in the commissioner's office, so it makes sense to put the money there. And then the missing and murdered Indigenous persons live within our Alaska Bureau of Investigation, which is in our Alaska State Troopers Division. So it's just budgetarily where these pieces are housed. Thank you. Moving on, or staying within our Alaska State Troopers Division, we're going to talk or introduce some aircraft section budget, significant budget changes. Our first request is to add two pilots, one in Fairbanks and one in Nome. Currently, these areas are being covered by temporary duty assignment, so meaning that we have to fly a pilot to Fairbanks when the Fairbanks pilot is off for training or off for days off, and et cetera. Weather delays have impacted our mission up in the Fairbanks area when the pilot cannot get up there. This will provide for full-time support and seven-day coverage in Fairbanks. Same thing with Nome. The pilot works days on, days off, a different sort of schedule. And again, we fly somebody up for coverage, and this will provide for consistent coverage and mission delivery without interruption in those two areas. Our second request is for a maintenance inspector. Currently, we have two, and this is in Fairbanks. Currently, we have two in Anchorage. As our aircraft fleet increases, and because we realize it's important that a well-maintained aircraft fleet can stay active and working for us, we believe that a maintenance inspector in Fairbanks will benefit us, as this will oversee maintenance contracts and assure quality insurance on that work by maintenance vendors for our fleet in Fairbanks. Our last request is for a criminal justice planner in the aircraft section to run our drone operation program. This program is currently being managed by an individual on our command staff and headquarters who's within the Alaska Wildlife Troopers as other duties is assigned, because he happens to be proficient in drone operations. So we need to relieve him of this duty, and this criminal justice planner will also help us ensure compliance with state and federal reporting, as there's some of that related to drone operations. We're really pleased with our drone program so far. We have 29 drones so far. We have another 19 on order. We're pleased that we've been able to operate the drones without disrupting traffic flow, so they can map out an accident without stopping traffic, which is important on certain highways where there's no other option but to stop and wait. Our next slide is for us to talk about some success stories related to our drug investigations. And we couldn't help but talk about our canines as well, because we're very proud of them.
Through the chair, I'll...
Just one note here. We just really wish you'd bring one of your canine officers. Anyway, thank you. Sorry. No, I didn't want to not to interrupt. Thank you.
Through the chair, you can see the slide. I'll just talk drugs in Alaska, if that is okay. As you know, that Alaska has a drug problem. We continue to set records in the amount of drug seizures we're seizing around the state. I just noticed less than 10 days ago, we seized 26 pounds of meth out of the Anchorage Airport. And if you look at the effects of what drugs are doing to our state, we're averaging about 250 drug-related overdose deaths. I just saw two in the last week in the Mat-Su Valley. It's again, I hate to use devastating, but it is devastating to the people of Alaska. And it's not regardless, and we've got task force in Southeast Alaska, Northwest Alaska, Anchorage, the Mattoo Valley, the Kenai Peninsula. I mean, we've got drug enforcement pretty much all over the state, and we continue to set records in the amount of seizures. And a lot of that is meth, fentanyl, and cocaine's coming back as drug of choice. And if you look at the amount of fentanyl that we've seized over the last year, and it was 41.5 million potential fatal doses of fentanyl. So certainly we have to do all we can to stop it. And we do employ canines. We have 11 canines that are either dual purpose, meaning they are on patrol and can sniff drugs, or specifically focused just on drugs. The chocolate lab there, that's Sunny. That's our newest canine. And that dog is, believe it or not, I don't know how they do it, but it sniffs out electronics. So if you've got a search warrant, so either because drug users, they all use a phone. Most of them probably use burner phones for they can't be traced. And then our child pornography. So when we're doing search warrants, we can find their electronics either in their homes, their cars, or wherever they're keeping them. So that's our newest members to the canine unit. I will say that our drug investigators are focused around the state. I get to talk to them every once in a while. And in fact, I ran into one at the airport the other day, and they're working hard. And we're working with federal and working with the local police departments like Juneau Police Department, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, North Slope Borough Police. So we are working, trying to stem this flow of drugs flowing into our state.
All right, thank you, Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, thank you for that information. I know you had a large bust of fentanyl. What happens to these people? I mean, are we able to get them off the streets for good? You know, obviously they're probably responsible for a lot of deaths with fentanyl, with how dangerous it is. Do you have the tools to get these people off the street for good?
Through the chair, that's a good question. I don't know that we'll ever get them off the streets for good. I know there was, or there's a current bill to, if a person provides illicit drugs to somebody and that person overdoses and dies, that it could be wrapped up to a higher level charge, and hopefully it would hold people more accountable to their actions. You know, all I can say is drugs are pretty much everywhere. It doesn't matter where I go. The villages are starting to get it. And a small amount of drugs in a village can be very harmful to that village. It doesn't take much. So I don't know that I answered your question. I think the legal tools are there. It's just a matter of, you know, getting through the process, through the trials, and then, you know, the judicial system has to work the way they work. And I don't know that we'll ever take them off the street forever.
So follow up. Mm-hmm. So what happens when somebody, when you catch someone with just a huge amount, what are they facing?
Well, you know, through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, it just depends on the volume. And a lot of times on the bigger seizures, we'll take it federally because the federal side has more sanctions that they can put or more jail time, and especially if there's firearms or something else involved or if they're repeat offenders. So a lot of the bigger cases we go with the federal court system versus the state because of the penalties are much harsher.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I want to sort of go back to my earlier comments at the very outset. Had the commissioner come out to Dillingham, I think it was, November 8th or 9th or 10th or something like that. We tried to find a window of good weather, and by golly, it was halfway decent cold. But the commissioner came out, and we held a number of meetings, a couple of community hall meetings, and I think we toured the public safety facility, and we made the stop at the local radio station. And it was a really revealing visit for me because among our stops, we got to visit with the parents of of a daughter. Very tragic. Oh, my goodness. Heartbreaking. 2 days out of high school. Young gal with just the world ahead of her. Off to go to college. And then tragically, she dies because of a drug incident that was, should never have happened. The visit was also very illuminating for me as well, because the Dillingham area, as is the greater Bristol Bay area in the summertime, gets transformed. You know, in the wintertime, it's basically sleepy hollows. In the summertime, it's, several times over, bustling with people and boats and trucks and airplanes coming and going, this, that, and the other. But there's also, during that summer months, the opportunity for this nefarious activity to take place. And I just thought if I could get the committee's indulgence to hear from the commissioner of what he learned on that trip and then what came of those visits, because, he noted that this is very personal to him. And I really appreciate that it's personal to me. It's personal to all of us, because we all know somebody who's been impacted one way or the other through the scourge that we continue to fight day in and day out. But Commissioner, through the co-chair, if you might be able to expand a little bit on that trip, I'd really appreciate it.
Through the chair, I hope you have some time. Because he's, like you said, it was very personal. I met with the family, the daughter that passed away on an overdose. We believe it was fentanyl. They've lost multiple residents in Dillingham for that reason. I lost my son to a drug overdose. He was 26 years old, so it's personal. Sorry. But every time I go to a community, and I've got connections in the Bristol Bay region, so I kind of know what's going on. I spent a town hall meeting in Togiak, same issues, drugs and alcohol in their village. And what struck me is, first of all, he kept me pretty busy. And Joel Hard was there, the VPSO director. I want to put him in there because we wanted to talk VPSO issues too. Is first of all, we met with the city council, I guess we call it the city leaders, and the same theme that I've been hearing around the state came from that meeting. Essentially, drugs, alcohol, and smaller communities, lack of law enforcement. They're struggling keeping their police department going, and the reliance of the Alaska State Troopers. Did about a 40-minute radio interview there at the local radio station, public radio. We did a town hall meeting that next morning. Again, this was just like local folks coming in and telling us the way it is. And some of these conversations are very, very hard. I mean, they're because you got people that have been victimized, potentially their homicide or sexual assault or drug abuse. And again, I appreciate the opportunity. One of the first things I did when I came back and Joel is we had a meeting with our drug captain, the colonel of the Alaska State Troopers, to see what we could do in Dillingham, what actions could we do. I did know there was some stuff going on in Dillingham on the law enforcement side. So essentially we got our thinking heads, how are we going to address this issue, because they wanted a drug investigator. Well, the colonel of the Alaska State Troopers, Mo Hughes, the captain, Moose Sims, got together and they decided we got a house now. We're going to bid a drug investigator, and we do have a drug investigator going there in probably around May or June, depending on how we can get him there. And I got to talk to the family that lost the daughter. He called me up right away, and I got to talk to her, and they were excited. So the department has made a difference, regardless, even with our shortages. And I've talked to the wildlife troopers because they have a lot of boots on the ground during the Bristol Bay salmon fishery. And they're going to prop up. They're not only going to do fishery enforcement, they're going to also look for drug enforcement in some of the beach areas and the fishing camps. So with those type of – those things don't go away. I mean, when I visit these communities, they don't go away. Togiak, it was probably a year and a half ago when I went to Togiak, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I want to say about 54 of their kids, may have been a little bit less, maybe it was 34, were in OCS care. They were still in the village, but they were in OCS care. because of drugs and alcohol. And that's what's happening. We just had this huge drug bust that was perking around when I was in Dillingham. In fact, one of the drug investigators and the troopers, if you see a drug investigator out by themselves, you don't walk up and say, how you're doing? You just kind of have to ignore them, right? Because you don't know if they're working or not. But I did see a drug investigator there while we were there. He or she was on our airplane. But to get back to where I was at, and I don't remember where I was at now, Togiak, but the issues are kind of the same, and people want to be safe, and we provide that safety as long as we're there. And they've been so kind. It doesn't matter what village I've been to. I've been to a lot over the last 3 years because I don't travel out of state. I travel in state because in state is where it needs to be. They all say the same thing, and they're always so kind. They really are. They want to hear you out, and like I say, they can be uncomfortable conversations, especially when it comes to suicides, MMIP issues. But the bottom line is, you know, the department, my troopers care. When they go out to those communities, they really do. And no different if they're in urban areas or rural areas, they care. They wouldn't be an Alaska State Trooper if they didn't. I think sometimes they get hardened because of what they see, but the bottom line is they care about their people.
Madam Butcher, just a quick follow-up. Commissioner, can you talk a little bit about the AKTIPS app?
I got it right here. I wrote it down.
You did.
One of the things that we found is a good tool for drug tips and stuff is the app AKTIPS. You can find it on your iPhone or the other phones that you have. But it's an app that will communicate directly to the Alaska State Troopers. And we've been pushing it really hard. We pushed it when we were in Togiak. We pushed it really hard. We went to school, got to see where he played basketball, all kinds of good things. But the bottom line is it allows people to send tips right to the Alaska State Troopers in Anchorage. We have a person that reviews all these tips and gives it to the area of responsibility. And what it is when you start receiving these tips, because a lot of people say, well, I sent in a tip. I've never heard anything back. We can communicate. It's completely anonymous. We can go. We have a conversation with them through the app. And it's kind of like a big puzzle. You got this big puzzle out here just floating around, and start getting these tips in, and we got our people looking at all these tips in the drug world or for something else, primarily for drugs. But they could start putting it together. And if you look at what we did recently with the support of the federal government, state, and you know, we had the big bust in Dillingham not 2 or 3 weeks ago. We arrested 10 in Dillingham and one in Anchorage that was living in Dillingham, seized a bunch of drugs there, and it was actually a multi-state drug bust that ended up, I think we arrested, there's charged between the federal and us and the other police agencies, about 54 or 57 suspects in that one case. So we do have drugs. We do have cartels coming to Alaska because it's a huge area. They profit a little bit of fentanyl in Alaska is worth a lot more street side value than it is in the lower 48, where it's really not very expensive. So that's why the drugs are coming to Alaska, because Alaskans are willing to pay for it at a high rate. And the only concerning thing to me is with all these seizures we're doing, we're not seeing a huge spike in drug costs, because usually if we're intercepting a lot and making a dent, it's supply and demand. So if your supply is down, your demand's still up, you're going to pay a lot higher price than if we still have lots of drugs on the streets. So we haven't seen a huge increase in drug prices.
And I think one other feature to this app that really is intriguing to me, to the former teachers around the table here, is that it gives students the ability to anonymously sort of project what they see and hear in the schools, and there's just so much stuff even infiltrating, you know, at that level. Yeah, and of course, a community member, you know, I'm born and raised out in the bush, and it's really hard to make that call or to, you know, to put that information forward. But this gives you an opportunity to do it anonymously, and I hope at some point it becomes a bit of a game changer, because the department, these investigators rely so much on those tips. So I'm pretty excited about where this could lead down the road, and appreciative that the department is working. So you probably improve the app over time, I'm sure, as well.
To the chair, if I can make one comment, it's not 911. So if you fall off your snow machine and break your leg, don't hit the app thinking that we're going to be there. It may not happen. So it's one thing we want to do. But, you know, in our visit, one of the things we got to do is talk to the folks, but tell them what kind of information we're looking for. Saying that Joe Blow is selling dope doesn't really help us. But if they can tell us when it's coming, what house they're in, or what vehicle they're driving, all these other things that will eventually add up to we'll track them down. And so the better, the quicker the information, the higher likelihood we'll make a good case on it. And that's one of the things that we strive to do. And again, I really thank the representative for having us there. We did talk a lot of BPSO stuff, so I didn't want to leave that out.
Next slide.
Yeah. So I know it's been a long, but I told you you need some time on this one.
Thank you.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Coach. Real quick, do you have, is Alaska Chips on a Facebook page? Because that's the best way I can get that across my district and people to educate them to know.
We can do that.
That would be really, through the chair, that would be really helpful.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that. Oh, Representative Plum, yes.
So through the chair, thank you, Commissioner. I just had a question about the HIDTA. I think last year, if I remember right, you said most of the interceptions of drugs was coming through the Anchorage Airport. So I was wondering, with these larger bus, how does the troopers interact with the airport police? Are you guys, is your presence at the airport? Is it the Anchorage police? I'm in the airport police doing those interceptions, or is that on the troopers?
To the chair, I'm not going to go into great detail what we do, and it's actually high density drug trafficking area that we're all involved in. So we get some federal funding, and it allows us to coordinate. But we do work with the airport police, the Anchorage Police Department, FBI, DA, I mean, almost all law enforcement agency. North Slope Borough has a huge presence in our task force because of all the drugs that are going into Barrel. So essentially, we do have a presence at the airport. When we say we're, what I will say is most drugs that come to Alaska are coming through Anchorage.
Yeah.
And there's various ways that we can intercept them as a law enforcement agency. And I think we're pretty good at it, but we're not, you know, I don't want to get into too much details, okay. But certainly it's a team effort, and we couldn't do it without all our partners.
All right. Thank you.
Hold on. Okay. Very good. I'm going to go ahead and turn the gavel over to Representative Edmund for just a few moments. He can do the VPSO program, maybe a little bit more. I might have to step out for a second.
Sure.
Yeah. Moving on to slide 13, the Village Public Safety Officer Division. This their request is just over $24 million, which reflects a $3.4 million increase, or 16.4%. That request is for salary increases and 10 additional Village Public Safety Officer programs, as we're continuing to restore the program after reductions in FY20.
The Chair, Representative Edmund, what I will say is the VPSO program has continued to grow at a pace that's sustainable, and it's one of the, I guess, the shining stars of the department right now, because we are able to fill positions. We've restructured the VPSO program in a way that I think will cement it for years to come. We put a division director now over the, and it's actually the VPSO division, it shouldn't be the director, which puts him on parity with the two colonel, all the directors within the Department of Public Safety. Specifically, he'll interface mostly with AST, Alaska State Troopers, or the Wildlife Troopers. Right now we're about 75. I think when I was commissioner, we started about 33 or 35, somewhere in that region. We have 11 at the State Trooper Academy, right, or the Department of Public Safety Academy right now. So we're excited with the direction it's going. Our new division director, the first one, is James Hosher. He's comes from the YK Delta. He was the Hooper Bay Police Chief, and he was also a VPSO himself. And prior to that, he was working in the Marijuana Control Board. He was an investigator there. So James comes with a huge amount of credibility and a huge amount of knowledge of the VPSO division. And we're excited about where it's going. We're in, I think, we got VPSOs in 54 communities, and we got an MOU with about 134 other communities or tribes. So progress, this is for a department and state government, this is pretty quick progress over the last 3 or 4 years. And again, thankful to the administration and to the legislature for having faith in us to move this program forward.
So I've got in the queue Representative Kronk, Josephson, Galvin at this point, and I'm going to slip in a question myself somewhere along the way, but Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just want to appreciate this. You know, I have the craziest, largest district in Alaska with the most communities, and you know, one of our big things is safety, you know, public safety. And we went on a couple Yukon River trips with Tanana Chiefs and their VPSOs that they've been working through, and it's a really positive experience, and they're well received in the community. So thank you for what you're doing. I can't wait to get more out there. We're on the right track, so thank you.
Yeah, and before we go to Representative Josephson and Representative Galvin, you know, this change that's occurring is transformational. It really is. It's a big deal. Maybe I've been around too long. I got to quit saying that because others are going to start agreeing with me. But, you know, the VPSO program has been around since, what, the early 80s in some sort of form or fashion. Some years it gets funded, some years not so much. But it's sort of had to you know, respectfully find its niche in between the grantees out in the field, the department, and certainly its relationship with the state troopers. And finally, I think all these years later, it's got its standing in the department that it richly deserves and has always deserved. And the first director is, I think I get a chance to meet with him here in Juneau face-to-face. He was one of two VPSOs at the time. It was a 2009-2010 that qualified to be an armed VPSO. We passed a bill back when. And it was Director Holscher, who's I think out of Hooper Bay at that point, and then another individual who was a roamer out of the TCC, rover out of the TCC region. But for all the years that Commissioner Yu and Colonel Hart and others have been working to improve this program, you know, shout out to Senator Olson and others who played a role too. It is really, this is a big move, and I didn't ever think I'd see this before. But many thanks along the way to the department and yourself. Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Commissioner, you talked about MOUs with 134 local governments and tribes. I see great progress, and I applaud it. But what exactly, when I was in rural Alaska, in Kotzebue, there were VPOs, of course, and VPSOs. What could one expect visiting one of the 134 villages in terms of their public safety presence?
To the chair, Representative Justin, a good question. A lot of the villages, whether they have a VPSO or not, have either tribal police officers or village police officers. It just depends. And out of the 134, I don't know which ones have which, because they can come and go depending on the circumstances of the community that they're serving. I did have a list. I might have how many VPOs that we currently have on the books. Yeah, there it is. So currently we have 62 village police officers serving in rural Alaska. I don't see tribal police, but I know that their turnover rate can be pretty high. Most of them, get trained at Ute there in Bethel, which we have a big presence. The Alaska State Troopers in providing training. They do have outside instructors come in, but it's something that we support because we think it's important.
Just a follow-up when you're done.
Through the chair, I think.
Okay.
I'll yield.
Through the chair, the what would the memorandum of understanding say exactly? What are the terms of a typical memorandum of understanding?
You know, through the chair, I'd have to give you a copy because I think it's depending on which village you're dealing with. But basically, the bottom line is that they're committing to support a VPSO and they want a VPSO in their village is essentially what the MOU spells out. And each tribe or each village has their tribal government and they decide the terms of it. But I can certainly try to get you a couple copies if you'd like.
I guess, we have a tendency to say we want all these documents, and the question is, can we read them all? But I guess what I'm wondering is, I thought what you were going to say is that the MOUs reflect that that there's some sort of delegation of duty to tribal police or VPOs. But what you're saying is these are 134 villages that are saying we want a VPSO. Is that?
Through the chair, I would say that's accurate. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Through the chair. Thank you for your work on this area. And I appreciate that this is, as we heard from the co-chair, that this is a landscape change and we're seeing really good opportunities for growing more public safety in our vast rural area. My question is related to I understand we have 10 new village public safety officers. We're currently in 54 communities, is what I heard, and 134 communities would like to have one. So my question is, what would happen if we doubled this number? Are there enough people signing up to get the training that you referred to in Bethel? If we were to add more, could we add more communities to this? That's my question.
To the chair, make sure that we're talking VPSOs.
Yes, sorry, VPSOs and not police officers. Correct, there is a difference, yes. So for VPSOs, which is what I think this is adding, 10 village public safety VPSO, and it sounds like a salary raise. So the question is, if this number was different, could we add more? Is there capacity and is there the will of the communities and do you think you have the candidates?
Through the chair, that's a difficult question. I will say the direction that the departments went is to try to ensure that we have the capacity because mm-hmm. in the past we've added huge amounts of money to the VPSO program and it didn't go anywhere and then we would get chastised for not getting the money spent. And organizationally, we didn't do a very good job of also giving them freedom to spend the money. So there's issues on our side too. And if you look at the VPSO bill that passed in the working group that occurred about 3 years ago, I mean, we're trying to follow the intent of the giving them a lot more flexibility. It seems to us, I mean, certainly if you probably talk to the organizations, put another 20 or 30. I'm not sure we could fill the 20 or 30, but we're really good at filling 10 or 12 or something like that. One of the issues that the VPSO struggle is no different than the troopers is housing, adequate housing in some of the communities. So that's always a stumbling block. We have multiple VPSOs, villages where we have two VPSOs because that was another thing of the working group was that the VPSOs one was getting burned out fairly quickly, so we've went to multiple or two VPSOs in villages and the villages that want them. So we're looking at the RPSO, the regional public safety officer. There's some intent language on the Senate side on that where they're more they have I don't know if authority is the right word, but they have the ability to rover around, and we're working with that right now. That way, if we don't have, we might have a VPSO and say, Emonic, and then there's a couple other villages that BPSO, if we can get our PSO to rove into those villages, give them a little bit more flexibility, actually be maybe a supervisor for so just kind of a higher level. It also gives them a step higher to go because they would get paid at a higher rate. So,
thank you. Appreciate that. I understand the need for the incremental growth and so that it's successful. Thank you.
All right. Very good, Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Kretcher. And I think one of the really important things is your willingness to partner with our tribal entities. You know, I know they work with you to help fill in these gaps and find people. And that this is a partnership that we have to have. I mean, the state cannot just stand alone and do this. We have to be partners with everybody. So thank you.
Through the chair, I appreciate that. You know, I will say, and I've said before, is everywhere that I've traveled in rural Alaska, and I have a meeting tomorrow with Saliska Corporation. I've had two other meetings with corporations, but they all want, again, they want to be safe in their communities. They want to know that when something happens, somebody can respond. There's not one that says they don't want an Alaska State Trooper or a VPSO. I have yet to have any community turn that down. Now, So the bottom line is there's a need, and we need to fill the need, and we're trying to fill the need.
All right, continuing on, we've got a few more slides. I think we
moving on to slide 15 is our Alaska Police Standards Council. Their request is they have a single request for an investigator. And their increase is just over $200 DGF. This council does not have any general fund. It's only funded by other and designated general. This increase for this investigator is much needed, we believe. This council was founded in 1996 when there were four cases. In 2022, there's now 32 cases. But not only that, they're responsible for certifying officers, a combined total of just over 2,800 officers, which comprise village police officers, probation officers, corrections officers, and a few long-term non-perps. Moving on to our new Victim Services Division. This division, again, is a division that we are forming this year, which is combining our Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, our Violent Crimes Compensation Board, as well as three entities that are currently housed within the Alaska State Troopers, which includes our Domestic and Violence and Sexual Assault Training Unit, our Victim Navigator Program, as well as our Missing Persons Clearinghouse. This division combines all of those functions into one division, and we're excited about that. We think that we will be able to serve victims, their families, and support them in a better way. This division will have a total of 29 full-time positions. The majority of this funding will be the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which already has a successful grant-making program, which is about 50% federal authority. The Victim Services Division has a number of significant budget changes. With the division, we are requesting three positions, two victim navigators, which are classified as paralegals, but they're victim navigators that work to help victims and their families through the case, which allows them more communication and involvement and information about their case that troopers simply do not have the time to provide, an administrative assistant to carry the administrative burden related with the consolidation of all of these entities within a division. We also plan to transfer positions from the Alaska State Troopers to comprise this division, including three program coordinators, a training specialist, five existing paralegal, which are victim navigators, and a criminal justice technician. And again, to highlight the largest change for this division, again, is the decrement of the Restorative Justice Fund. Again, this is permanent fund money for ineligible Alaskans. which is the distribution of this fund is based on a statutory formula. When the permanent fund dividend is lower, it impacts revenue for the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. And so that's what we're seeing here. Moving on to the Statewide Support Division. Let's see here. This division comprises, again, our Statewide Services Division, which is under the leadership of Lisa Purrington, the Division of Administrative Services, our Commissioner's Office, as well as our Training Academy. So this is a busy division that supports the entire department as well as the entire state. Their budget request is just over $55 million, which is a $2 million increase, or 2.2%. Significant budget changes within this division include fully funding for two Department of Law criminal attorneys within our Commissioner's Office. The department currently has these attorneys, and we've been attempting to fund them via reimbursable services agreement to the Department of Law for a number of years now. Between law and us, we've been sharing funding for these positions the best we can. We can no longer afford these positions. There was never a budget request associated with them, and we're requesting for the funding for them now. The second request is within our Training Academy. It's for rising instructor overtime costs and services costs. We've dove into our budget, and we've looked at our actual personal services costs against our actual expenditures within the Training Academy, and realized that the last couple of years we've been moving funding up into the personal services line or subsidizing the Training Academy from other components within the Statewide Services Division to fund the high cost of overtime, knowing that the academy works on a concentrated time schedule. Two academies, instructors are working pretty hard during those academy sessions, which results in the overtime. The services cost is just addressing inflationary costs related with utilities, heating oil, water, and food costs. Our last request is a one-time increment for a crime data portal. This provides transparency for the public. The department responds to requests from the public and media and lawmakers for crime statistics, and we believe this new module will make the data available to the public in a searchable database to ensure the department can meet the state and federal requirements for crime reporting with existing staffing. So that concludes our presentation.
All right. So we have one question thus far, and I have a question afterwards, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Halloran, I want a little more information to understand the two Department of Law criminal attorneys, because, of course, there's far more criminal attorneys. So are they prosecutors? Do they only work on specific cases, or why we aren't? I mean, on one hand, it should just be in their budget. We assume that the attorneys, the Department of Law, work on AST cases all the time.
To the chair, Representative Hannon, I'll try to answer that question. The department, for many years, has had a staff attorney at headquarters because of all the legal issues the department has. It's continuous, where we can get sound legal advice on complicated either cases or complicated issues that occur. We can certainly keep the current one really busy, and we also have one that's focused more on determining if a sex offender has to register in Alaska, or our NICS checks on firearms, if a person can legally have a firearm based on any criminal history. So essentially they're doing research and also on some of the sensitive, I'll call them PIRs, public or FOIA requests, this department gets average about $10,000 a year, and it helps us. It helps us. We would be lost without that advice. And if not, we end up having to seek that advice. We have to get paid by the hour. We get charged by the hour. So for us, it's in the two that we have now are top notch. And we certainly don't want to lose them, nor do we want to. I mean, it's the right thing for our department. It'll save us millions of dollars potentially in the long run if we make a mistake on how we conduct business on a civil lawsuit.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, just a question to go back to slide 16 and 17. There's a reference to undesignated general funds. Just so everybody's aware of what those are and what they mean, can you touch upon them, Ms. Halloran, if you would, please?
Yes, Co-Chair Edgman. The undesignated general funds is essentially UGF, and we are grateful to have them within this division, or at least within our Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. A fair amount of the grants that go out of this division are DOJ type at Department of Justice federal grants that are reimbursement only. And it's an incredible burden for our grantees to have to do the paperwork and the forms required to get that reimbursement. A lot of these are small shelters, and so they're struggling to be able to attach a little bit of UGF to those grants, general undesignated general fund to those grants, helps keep our shelters, gives them a little bit of leeway. There, just to highlight, there is no undesignated general fund in our Violent Crimes Compensation Board. That agency has crime victim compensation funds, which is essentially its allocation from the restorative justice account, as well as federal VOCA compensation dollars.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Co-Chair.
All right. Is that where we? Yes, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, on the last subject you discussed there, the domestic shelters, violence shelters, and the council. Last year, they came to me and they said, we're short-funded because we've lost, maybe there were some COVID-related dollars or some VAWA dollars. We've got increased utilities costs. We're spreading that around the domestic violence shelters. I made an effort to help them, was unsuccessful. Incredibly credible people, when they say we need this, I assume they do. Where do we stand on meeting those needs? If you know.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, co-chairs, it's important to highlight that with the reduction of the Federal Victims of Crime Act funding, there is a reduction of general fund within the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We benefited from a one-time increment in FY23 and another one-time increment in FY24. There is not one this year, so we won't be surprised if you hear from our shelters this year again.
That's all I needed. Thank you.
I think we're probably on the last page. I thought we were. I guess
We did. Yeah,
Representative Plum.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, this might be for Ms. Parrington. So on the statewide support, this is probably because I'm doing the subcommittee on DOA too. What part are there's been some confusion on what departments are doing their own IT and their own procurement and their own HR. Feels like you guys are, I guess the question is, what's the intersection between DPS and DOA right now? What do they do for you, or do you guys do all those areas?
For the record, Lisa Parrington, Division of Statewide Services with the Department of Public Safety, through the co-chairs to Representative Colomb. It's a work in progress right now. With the IT staff that we have in the department, for the most part, they are there to support our line of business operations with all of the various systems and applications that we use. We also have I want to say it was in the last 2 years, we've gotten some network support staff to come back to help us set up our and manage our own network connectivity within the department. And then we just recently had some of the technical support staff. It's usually we call it the help desk for computer installs, your passwords locked out. So we now have those staff have been returned to the department, and we're incorporating that into it. For the most part, the OIT, Office of Information Technology, will handle statewide enterprise solutions. So it's the Outlook that you have for our calendaring, our emails, our phone systems, some of the network infrastructure at the statewide level. That's going to be the bulk of it. And a very high-level Google Earth overview of the IT support between what the department is doing and then what the Department of Administration, Office of Information Technology is doing.
Great. Thank you.
Very good. Anything, any final questions, thoughts, comments? All right. Not seeing any. We truly appreciate your presentation today, and I know you have a good subcommittee chair, and we'll be going through more and more on this, but I know our goal is to make sure we have a very functional and vibrant public safety division. That's the state of Alaska here. So I'm always very proud of the troopers. Thank you. Oh, yes, Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Commissioner. I have one question. So it refers back to Area M and the fish checking stuff. Do you know what kind of penalties would those people have? I mean, this is serious stuff. We're trying to stop this. I mean, is it a slap on the wrist? You get to go fishing again next year and do the same thing over? And are we going to prosecute a majority of those cases? I mean, there's lots of rumors out there of what you found, and I don't want to get into details, I know. But it's very concerning if we're going to go do that stuff. Are there real penalties that actually have an impact of stopping what's going on?
Through the chair, it depends on, and I don't know the direction the department's going on, or the attorney. We have a fish and game attorney where they're going. They can either charge them under a strict liability violation with the maximum fine, depending on the type of violations. I think it's $3,000 for the first offense, and it goes up. Or they can charge them with a Class A misdemeanor, or fish and game Class A misdemeanor, where it could be $10,000 or a year in jail, or $10,000 and forfeiture of fish. And theoretically, we could seize their vessel too. We didn't, but we do have the authority to seize vessels in fish and game cases. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for your presentation. And for tomorrow, we have two meetings, Wednesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. 8:30. We have a first meeting at 8:30 a.m. Committee will be hearing HB 81 and acts relating to transfer on death titles, HB 148, an act relating to Alaska Performance Scholarship, SB 193, an act relating to increasing internet speeds for schools, and HB 155, an act establishing the Alaska Military Affairs Commission. The second meeting will be at 1:30 p.m. The committee will be receiving a presentation on the Alaska Permanent Fund and the capital market forecast by Callan and Associates. Seeing no further business before the committee at 3:20, we are adjourned.